pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday morning. Hour number three is now underway. 251-343-0106. Need me to touch me, your show host. All you do is text me. Got a couple of texts we'll get to here in just a moment. Silicon Andrew Sorrell, our state auditor. We'll talk about closer Republican primaries, a kind of an outlook, and we'll talk about election results. Alabama went about as expected. I'm still a little in the trouble zone with Rhett Marcus at AL2. He's still the favorite, but you would have liked to see him get to about 60. I think he had to get to 50 at a minimum to put fires out. He got just at 50%. And he will face Shamari Figures in November for the Republican, in the general election for that seat. Had there been a runoff scenario, he would have missed the runoff, but he would have only done it with 8 votes to spare. So, like I said, he passed the test. D is for diploma. So he's in good shape, I guess, on a technicality. But to keep the NRCC out, and to keep, you know, a lot of national Republican money from having to go into Alabama, that should be a layup. He probably needed to do a little bit better there. Such as it is, that's where we are today. Jerry Carl winning his race outright yesterday in the 1st Congressional District. Really across the board. I didn't look at these county-by-county results. He won Mobile County by 71 points. He won Baldwin County by 42 points. He won Covington County by 21 points. That was Sidwell's strongest county, Andalusia Op. And he won Escambia County by a whopping 84 points. So 31,000 votes cast yesterday. He won the closest vote getter. He defeated by, 57 points. So a strong showing, but we knew he was going to be fine. Most of us did. You never knew. The low turnout event, if someone catches fire in one place, it gets a big turnout out, but it didn't happen. AL2 with Rhett Marcus winning 50%. To Hampton Harris is 22%. About 9,000 votes there to spread out of 32,000 votes. 32,801 votes reported. Harris won one county, won Lowndes County, and Dave Matthews won one county, won Dale County. So Rhett with 16,411 votes, just barely more than 50%. And he won Montgomery by only 4 points, which was the biggest county by far. Now, he won his home county, Coffee County, by 45, and he won Houston County, another big population center with City of Dothan, with 44 points. Pike County by 31. Crenshaw by 43. Yeah, there's Covington County. He won. There's a little sliver of Covington County that's in AL2. He won by a big margin, but only 214 votes there. So, going into November, it'll be a topic for discussion. The media, I guess, are going to try to do something here, if they haven't already, on Representative Marcus. But we'll put that past us and we'll move on to the general election here. It's all done. The ballot is now finalized. The others, no surprises. I can run through them real quick for you. Maurice Mercer won the Democrat nod in AL6. He's going to run against Palmer. That not really, wasn't really close. Case Dixon, who I got to know a little bit, got 13% of the vote. Gary Palmer doing really, really well yesterday. For some reason, people want to run against Gary Palmer. And maybe it's because he kind of violated a term limit pledge, but doesn't seem to matter. He won most of the counties he ran in by 70 points, 65 and 75 points each in that Republican primary. I guess the grand vote total there, 28,147 voted in the Republican primary and 8,412 voted in the Democrat primary. So no real trend there to think that the Democrats could sneak up either. Terry Sewell won her. She was unopposed. She won the 7th. And Amy Akin, who we were kind of talking about it and during the Buttram segment, 12,692 votes in AL7 in the Republican primary. And like I said, we don't know what Democrats would have shown up because it was an uncontested event. So there's no way of knowing that. But it's a solidly Democratic seat right now. I think all of the stuff you when we talk about AL7, it has more to do with what's going to happen in the future there. And the way the lines might be drawn, can you draw the lines in such a way in Alabama to go 7-0? And is that what the legislature wants to do? That's a question we can talk about with Andrew Sorrell later on. Nationally, like I said, the Minnesota and Wisconsin in the elections last night, far more Democrats showed up. But two reasons there. Obviously, there's more Democrat enthusiasm with Trump in office. But there's also was a more compelling races on the Democrat ticket. This is what they're going to have to deal with. Democrats are going to have to figure out their civil war and get that straightened out for the, I don't think 2026, but I certainly think 2028, this is going to be a problem for them. These DSA candidates are not going away. Somehow they're going to have people that will give them money. They're going to be competitive. It's going to be fascinating to watch. But it's not a short-term problem, but it's certainly a long-term problem. And you're already hearing, it's a Donna Brazile and James Carville and these old school, long time Democrat mouthpieces. Oh, we just don't like these DSA candidates. They don't reflect the values of the Democratic Party. I expect more of that beginning around January. Once the new Congress is sworn in, and this is the other thing. We are going to have Democrats fighting over leadership in the House of Representatives. That is going to happen. It's going to look a lot like it did for Republicans when they won in 14, not 14, but 22. Remember the votes? Having endless voting to try to get Kevin McCarthy over the finish line. The Gates problem, Matt Gaetz, now a TV personality on OANN, but our friend from Pensacola, just did not want to vote for Kevin McCarthy. His vote was his currency, and he had an ethics investigation looming. Fire Dog, when you're in the presence of the President of the United States, no matter who it is, you're expendable, and if you're too dumb to rise it, then you shouldn't be on our in Air Force One. Yeah, you're right. But the thing about it, Fire Dog, is just trying to pin this on Trump. Like he was sitting there and he knew about the threats immediately and he concocted the scheme to get away in a food truck and let the others die and perish in a fire attack or a shoulder fire missile attack. Is that really? Oh, look at this coward! You're going to call Trump the coward? Is that, you know, with the images of blood on his face after Butler, Pennsylvania? You think that's going to work for you? Go for it. Or you just text into this show and try to get me to debunk this silliness, I guess. We got plenty. We got 3 hours to fill every day. We can do that if that's your thing. But it's not going to work. No matter what you think, Democrats are going to do well because of one thing, the economy. They're going to do well for two things. I take it back. Just the anti-Trump sentiment is way more fired up than the pro-Trump sentiment, and they're going to show up to vote. But that happens in midterm elections. That's something that's just kind of the nature of politics. The pendulum swings back and forth. We had Obama for 8 years. The pendulum swung in one direction, and it swung back for Donald Trump. The pendulum swung back the other way for Joe Biden, albeit it was kind of forced with some of the things that went on in our voting. And it swung back in the other direction for Donald Trump again. And now it's going to swing back for Democrats. And we're in the middle of that swing, guys. And Trump may have sped it up a little bit with the you know, even though you want to, whatever you want to say about Iran, if it's necessary, unnecessary, whatever, that expedited that pendulum swinging back on the Democrat side. It's the nature of politics. It's political science. We're always trying to achieve this equilibrium, but we never quite get there. It's just something that doesn't happen. There's just in our democracy, in our system, people get dissatisfied and the reaction is vote them out. There's some exceptions, but look how rare they were. When's the last time there was an exception? Was after the 9/11 attack in 2002, Republicans grew their majorities in the House and the Senate. Otherwise, it just doesn't happen. And the name of the game at this moment in history ought to be, well, how do we play damage control? How do we try to soften those gains as much as possible? And Republicans have done something that, you know, Republicans have been trying to do for decades, that they were able to win in court on redistricting. That's going to help. There are far many Republican states than Democrat states. The Democrats have the voting advantage. In the long term, this will pay dividends for Republicans. It's going to be that much harder for Democrats to get control of Congress. But it's sort of the price you pay, especially with a caustic figure like Donald Trump. There's no getting around that. We love him for being, you know, that guy. But a lot of people, it just eats at their soul. Like my friend Quinn Hillier, just a totally different person than he was 20 years ago. It's just, there's something about him that gets to people, and it shows up in voting behavior. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
I've done it many times. Somebody take me home.
Living on the road, my friend, was gonna keep you free and clean.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday morning, 251-343-0106. If you need to be in touch with me, your show host, that's what you do. You hit me up on the text line. Still to come, Andrew Sorrell, that's in the next segment, so stick around for that. Also, a quick programming note, tomorrow on the show, April Murray Fogel, a couple other guests, just depends on how the day goes and what interests me or who is, I guess, willing and interested in being in on the Jeff Poehler Show on Thursday, but that's coming up for sure. We'll have y'all's favorite April Murray Fogel making her return to the program after 4 days fill-in duties a couple of weeks ago while I was away. As we said, we've been talking about election results, and I kind of hammered that home some of my sentiments on especially AL2. And that's the most interesting thing coming out of Alabama. I think more maybe pertinent to our discussion is the battle for Capitol Hill. And just looking in, and I know that a lot of the enthusiasm in especially Wisconsin was predicated on a gubernatorial election, but it's a good bellwether. Democrats had a good night. Overall, probably strategically, they had a very good night. They kept some of the DSA candidates at bay. There's one big upset in Connecticut that a lot of people are talking about today with one of the congressional races there. The John Larson, long time, I guess he's been... So he won in 98 the first time. He lost last night by 20 points. But he had had some Ivy/McConnell Biden-type issues, and I think the voters there, you know, I don't think it was particularly ideological. But Luke Braunin, former Hartford mayor, won a congressional seat in Connecticut last night, beating a long, long time incumbent. The other story, and you know, I've heard a little bit about this today, the polls are so bad in Wisconsin that Francesca Hong was supposed to win by double digits or something, and she lost by a very narrow percentage. These pollsters are oversampling the metropolitan areas. This is true across the board. They're just oversampling. And I think that's indicative of, I think it was true in 24. There's, you know, so for example, Wisconsin, Milwaukee and Madison are the two big cities, Green Bay to some degree. But they went in a big number for the more radical candidate. I guess Crawley won in Milwaukee County, but only by, it won by 3,000 votes out of about 130,000 or so. But Milwaukee, I mean, Madison went big for Hong. She won by 8 points there, 11,000 votes. And I think when they sample these, Green Bay, Oshkosh, she won. The metropolitan areas, they're going in these metropolitan areas and they're oversampling them relative to the entirety of the state. And I think that's skewing a lot of numbers. It's just there's more voters, there's more concentration of population. And if you have a sample that has too much Madison or you know, it would be like oversampling Birmingham. And I think that was some of what went on with Jared Hudson and why he looked to be way more competitive than the election results showed that he was. That the polling is not great right now. There's real divides when you go county to county, economy to economy, and you've got to get that number right. And if you get it wrong, you just blanket sample the state and you go for population, then that's going to skew your results. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Now don't tell me I've nothing to do. It's good to see you. I must go. I know I look a fright. Anyway, my eyes are not a cut.
They still smell the powder burning, and they probably always will. And on the old town square.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday morning. Text line, there's still time to get in, 251-343-0106, if you so choose. We'll get to see Ultra Runner Jason Derrick. We'll get to your text before the conclusion of today's program. But joining us now on the line, he is our state auditor. Always glad to get him on when we can. Andrew Sorrell is with us. Andrew, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Jeff. I'm well, and hopefully I'm only halfway through being your state auditor, about to wrap up the first term, and assuming I can win again in November, we'll have one more to go.
Well, yeah, and I think you're in good shape there. But let's start here. Anything stick out to you after last night, not just in Alabama, but nationally?
I paid very little attention to the national races. I did see that Lindsey Graham's sister made a runoff against the Freedom Caucus member, Ralph Norman. She underperformed, I thought, what I was expecting. I would have thought she could have won that without a runoff. So maybe that race is actually going to be competitive there. Ralph Norman just got done. He ran for governor, and his lieutenant governor candidate was actually a friend of mine, but they kind of got in late, and they didn't perform that well. I think they finished third. So I was surprised Ralph Norman did as well as he did, and I was surprised that, what's her name, Darlene, did as poorly as she did. So it remains to be seen who wins that race. The rest of the national stuff I didn't pay too much attention to. I did follow the Alabama races pretty closely, and really no surprises there. The candidates with the most money and the most name ID did well. Gary Palmer, Rhett Marcus, Jerry Carl, all, you know, won big. And all of them got over 50%. There was a lot of talk about, oh, this, it only takes a plurality to win this. So yeah, somebody could have won, but our nominee with 33% of the vote, but it didn't happen. Everyone who won ended up winning big. I think the closest was Rhett Marcus, and he still had about a 29-point win. So really no surprises there. The infuriating thing about what happened yesterday was seeing Tabitha Eisner on Facebook, the former vice chairman of the Democrat Party. Until a week ago, she was vice chair. She ran for secretary of the Democrat Party and narrowly lost. But she proudly went in and voted in Elmore County and voted for who she believed to be the weakest Republican, just to sabotage our primary election and give us a weak nominee for the general, and then bragged about it on Facebook. And I did not appreciate that. I did appreciate the fact that I think it helps us pass a closed primary bill, but I don't appreciate her doing that.
Well, one thing about the Rep Marcus, I think there's some weakness there. Andrew, he only got 50% by 8 votes. Had there been a runoff, I mean, he still would have been clear. But he's got the toughest general election, and Shamar Figures is an incumbent member of Congress who could raise money. I don't think that, you know, Shamar Figures is going to sneak up and surprise and shock the world or anything like that. But I do think it's one of these elections where it can't be taken for granted, and they're going to have to use some national money in AL2 to get him to get Rhett Marcus over the finish line, where that money probably ought to be spent elsewhere.
Yeah, you're right. And Hampton Harris outperformed my expectations. He got 21% of the vote and had very little money. You know, Hampton is a talented young man. I like him and his wife. They're highly intelligent. I think he has a bright future. But, you know, I don't think you win Congress with $150,000 these days. You know, Rhett Marcus spent, I think, $1.5 million, and then the super PAC supporting him spent an additional $1.7 million. So you had $3.2 million being spent versus $150,000 for the second place finisher. So, I mean, you're right. He probably should have gotten an even bigger margin than he did. Maybe that shows a little bit of sign of weakness, but the amount of national money that's going to pour into CD2 to make sure it flips back to red. If Rhett needs $5 million to win the race, he's going to have it. The state party, we've got a federal and a state account. I know the state party is going to shell out to flip that seat back. So I think at the end of the day, we're going to be successful with it. Your point is well taken. I thought, you know, Gary Palmer and Jerry Carl got, you know, 75% and 85%. Rhett Marcus got 50.03. So perhaps you could say that was an underperformance.
Yeah. And, you know, like I said, Rhett should win that race, but, you know, there's a bunch of things that Shamar Figures is going to have working for him. He's the Montgomery guy. He's running against Rhett Marcus, who is from the Wiregrass, the rural part of the district. He's not even from Dothan. He's from Enterprise. So these things are going to make you know, it's going to do this. The AL.coms and some of these Democrats are going to think that there's a chance. It's just going to be kind of an annoyance here over the next few months. But I would have liked to have seen, I think Rhett needed to get 50% plus one no matter what to put this to rest. He did that. I would have liked to have seen that at, you know, not to take away from any other candidates, but to feel really, really good about it. It's north of 60%, I think.
I think even 55 probably would have been adequate, because then you'd have pushed Hampton Harris and David Matthews down closer to 15. And I think it would have been a 40-point gap instead of a 29. So, yeah, look, I understand what you're saying. But the Wiregrass versus Montgomery dynamic, one thing the Wiregrass does and does really well is they turn out. And you saw that 4 years ago when Katie Britt ran for U.S. Senate. You know, some of the highest turnout in the state was in the Wiregrass. They were pushing 50% turnout in a lot of those counties there. And incidentally, ended up helping me. I was winning the Wiregrass, although I'm from 5 hours away from there. And I'm a Muscle Shoals boy in North Alabama. But I won all of North Alabama and I won the Wiregrass. And the increased turnout in the Wiregrass just helped run my numbers up and run my score up. Same thing. I think, you know, the Wiregrass turned out for Barry Moore in the Barry Moore versus Jerry Carl race. Wiregrass turned out and voted 80% for Barry Moore. So the Wiregrass is, they're going to turn out. The something's in the water down there. They're getting multiple people. You're about to have two United States senators, Britt and Moore, and a congressman, Rhett Marcus, all from Enterprise. They are doing something right in the Wiregrass, because their people are winning and they're winning big.
Something that happened while I was away, we had a Republican Party, state Republican Party meeting, resolution on the table to close primaries. You know, the idea, I guess, that some lawmakers were kind of operating off of last session was, well, give them their bill, put it on the floor, do whatever we got to do. It'll go away. They'll forget about it, or it'll just be the usual chronic malcontents. I don't think that's going to be the case here. I think that at least Republican voters and those who go to meetings and put signs out and knock on doors, that they're going to make this a must pass thing.
Look, they were toying with us. That bill, you and I both know there were reasons that bill was introduced and moved through the House quickly. And it had to do with some comments that Nathaniel Ledbetter made about his opinions on the value of the Republican Party. That moved the bill through the House quickly, and then it stalled in the Senate. And I believe the plan was never for that bill to make it all the way through last session. Like that's exactly what I believe happened. And it frustrated me, because 10 years ago, when I was 30 years old, I was in the state Republican Party, and I brought a resolution saying we need to close our primaries because Democrats had started to infiltrate our primaries. And all these counties where they were 70-30 red, it's useless to vote in a Democrat primary. So they all started voting in our primary. And that bothered me. You know, the analogy I've always made is you don't let the Auburn football team pick the starters for Alabama. Right. If Auburn fans got to vote on who the starters were for Alabama, they're going to pick our worst players and make them start so that Auburn will win the Iron Bowl. Well, same thing here. We don't want Democrats picking the Republican nominees because they're going to pick the week one. We want Republicans picking our Republican nominees. So I passed this resolution 10 years ago at Al Gop, got about 85% of the vote. 8 years later, someone else passed a resolution. So this would be 2 years ago. Someone else brought the resolution. I co-sponsored it, and they passed it again, also with 85% of the vote. So the party has never really moved on this issue. We've always believed that Republicans should be voting in Republican primaries. Then the kerfuffle happens last session. The bill fails. On the last day of session, the House adjourns sine die with 6 hours remaining in the day for no apparent reason. They adjourned sine die, effectively killing all the bills still on the Senate calendar. So it frankly made me mad. So I wanted to take this to the next level. Now, Jeff, you know I serve as the bylaws chairman for the Alabama Republican Party. I've been in that role for almost 6 years. I've brought 45 bylaws changes to the floor. 44 of the 45 that I have brought on behalf of the bylaws committee have passed on the floor. Well, one of the things that the bylaws committee is responsible for is any changes to the Alabama Republican Party platform flow through our committee for a recommendation, a yes or a no recommendation to the full body. Now, we originally wrote the Republican Party platform back in 2017. Sam Gavan, who's now a state senator, Sam at the time was a senior vice chair of the party. He wrote it. We adopted it at the steering committee level. Then we took it to the full party, and it passed with near unanimous support. These are the principles that we believe in as Alabama Republicans. We have never amended the platform. In 9 years, the platform has never once been amended. So this time, my goal was to pass the first ever amendment to the Alabama Republican Party platform. So I authored it, and it said we support legislation that would prohibit members of other political parties from voting in our primaries. I think is the exact way that I worded it. I brought that to the floor about 10 days ago now. It was the August 1st meeting, and it passed unanimously by voice vote. There was not a single person in there that said no when Chairman Stodhagen asked for no votes. There were 350 people in attendance. It passed unanimously. We added that to our party platform. So now what we've done is we've given the chairman of the Republican Party the ability to go to the legislature and say the party now demands this. We literally put it in our platform. So if a legislator, a senator, a House member is going to vote against party registration, they're not just voting against party registration. They're not just voting against a resolution of the party. They're now voting against the Alabama Republican Party platform. And I hope that we've sent a stronger and a clearer message that it's time. It's time to pass that bill. And I believe you will see that bill go through this year. I've come on your show several times and made bold predictions. I remember about 3 years ago, I came on and I said school choice will pass next year. It was crazy when I said it. But you know what? It happened. School choice did pass the next year. This is another one of those moments. I remember predicting constitutional carry would pass. And that also passed in 2022. I'm going to predict it now. We will see party registration pass in the 2027 legislative session. Will probably be in effect for the 2028 race.
What changes in the Senate? The Senate's where I think the problem lies, it's going to be hard for Ledbetter not to bring it up again because there's just an authenticity. Like, did you really mean it, or were you just trying to make do for your comments? The Senate, man, and I talk to senators and even Sarah Elliott on this show, who I think is a like-minded conservative on a lot of the same things we are, just not really, they're not really interested in it.
Yeah, so again, I'm not sure that it was the Senate's fault that the bill didn't pass. The House is the ones who adjourned sine die with 6 hours left in the day. So, it was on the Senate calendar. We'll never know if the Senate actually intended to take it up or not, but they at least had it on the calendar and the House adjourned on them. But back to your comments, I know that there's at least two state senators who were strong no votes on it last year, and Tabitha Eisner has flipped their votes. After seeing her cross over and vote in our primary, at least two state senators have flipped their votes. So the momentum is moving in our direction. And I think it's hard if you're Jay Hovey and you benefited from the Democrat crossover in the Auburn area when he was able to, he got a number of Democrats to come out and support him publicly and vote for him and defeated incumbent Tom Watley, the state senator over there. This happened 4 years ago. That was another kind of like reminder. Oh, we need to do something about this. Nothing was done. But unless you're Jay Hovey, I don't know how you defend voting against this. Why is it confrontational or controversial to say that Republicans should be picking the Republican nominees? That's the most common sense thing in the world. So you get arguments like, well, I kind of live in a purple area. Well, you know what? When I was a legislator, I lived in the most purple state house district in Alabama. I got 52% in my election. That was the narrowest win of anybody. So don't use the fact that you live in a swing district as an excuse to not vote conservative and to not vote the platform of the party that you're representing.
Well, and who carries it? It's just, to me, you look at it and I've never seen it before, but there is just a total reluctance to even talk about it from senators. House members, they do what they're told, generally speaking. I you're making the bold prediction here, and I guess I'm kind of curious, like, you do think that that's enough, what happened in this cycle is enough that's going to force them to do this?
It was enough to flip two senators' votes. But no, what's ultimately going to get this through is I believe you will see Tommy Tuberville push for closing primaries. I've not personally spoken with him about this, but I'm reading the tea leaves, and I think that's what's coming. And I think the senators are going to have a hard time saying no to somebody with the popularity of Coach Tuberville. Generally, governors get whatever they want the first couple years. And I think this is going to be one of the things that, that he's going to stand up and push on. So, in fact, I'm pretty sure he even made a positive comment about the bill during last legislative session. I think he was asked about it and even said, yeah, that's something we need to do. So I don't think I'm too far out on a limb here predicting this. I think Tuberville comes out and he lays out his priorities to the legislature. And this may not be something in his, you know, inauguration speech, but it's probably something behind closed doors. He sits down with House and Senate leadership and says, I want this bill to move. And again, your point is spot on. The Ledbetter and the House have to pass the bill again, or it's going to look like they were only doing it as a make good for the comments that Ledbetter said. I think Ernie Yarborough carries the bill again. His plan is for it to be HB1. As soon as the organizational session's over, he's planning to run in there and file the bill again. And I think about anything with Coach Tuberville's support goes through in the first year.
The last question on that, is it going to be the plan that was always the plan last year? Are you heard a lot of talk about a Florida plan that would take some of the power away from the Republican Party and qualifying candidates? Is it going to be what we saw, you think, this last time around?
It will not be what we saw last time, and it will definitely not be the Florida plan, because there will be a revolt. The party loses the ability to qualify candidates, to remove candidates from the ballot, things like that. The Republican Party will never go for that. So it definitely, there were some senators trying to amend it to be the Florida plan, and that effort got killed very quickly. It's probably going to be the Oklahoma plan, which is where the legislature says that we have party registration, but independents can vote in either primary. And basically you leave it up to the parties whether or not they allow every 2 years they have to pass a resolution saying whether or not they're going to allow their primary to be open or closed. And then the Republican Party would simply pass a resolution every 2 years and say, we believe unless you're a registered Republican, you can't vote in our primary. That's the way that I see this going down. It's going to be the Oklahoma model. I think that's a more palatable model. It'll probably get a few more of those senators who are on the fence on board, because it's not then the senators closing the primaries. It's the party voting and saying, we're going to close the primaries. It kind of gives the senators an out with any other independents who they upset. So I think that's the model that we're going to see. It's going to be the Oklahoma model.
Andrew, we got to leave it there, but thanks for hopping on and walking us through a lot of this. And this will get to be the discussion we'll continue to have over the coming
months. Yeah, enjoy talking with you.
Andrew Sorrell, ladies and gentlemen, let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Boer Show at FM Talk 106.5.
In the ditch, we all picked the cotton, but we never got rich. Daddy was a veteran, a Southern Democrat. They ought to get a rich man to vote like that. Sing it.
Song of the South, sweet potato pie, and I shut my mouth. Gone with the wind, there ain't nobody looking back again.
Welcome back to the Jeff Boer Show, what FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on what's left of this Wednesday morning. Dirt Digger writes, Jeff, I like your show, and I'm so happy to hear what you do with your children. They're getting great memories with you and your family. Just a great, great good and a great as your show. Well, thank you for that. Ultra Runner Biden just did it during his midterm. He added to the Senate and governors and did a $5 gas tax and 9% inflation. Pendulum is rusting with our algorithm curated news. We don't oscillate as quickly. I think we oscillate a lot. Why? Because the news cycle is so fast that it swings faster. Jason, Jeff, do we turn the dismal voter turnout numbers around, or do they continue to dwindle? I think any kind of incentive to get people out to vote would work. Is a tax credit ridiculous? Steven had to think that way. I would disagree with that. One more here, Derek. Massive divide culturally, economically. These midterms are just the beginning of what's to come in 28. The MAGA movement wasted massive political capital. There's about to be a massive and swift move. Don't be shocked. The boomers brought this on themselves. 100 million versus the rest. Eisner wants the primaries closed. I don't blame her. It's good for Dems, says DEI texter. Matt says, morning, Jeff. Well, I mainly vote Republican. I can't say I'm being forced to pick one party or another in the primary. I like support free choices. And there have been many examples of poor Republican candidates and me voting on the other side All right, well, that's all I got time for. Coming up here shortly, midday, Mobile. Sean, what you got?
Dude, I do wonder, Jeff, how many of those 5.6% that turned out to vote yesterday were over, let's say, 45?
Based on my anecdotal evidence, all of them, including me.
There you go. We will discuss that coming up also. Cameron Smith joins me, Erica Thomas, and Vibrio. It's the Vib season here. Dr. Michaels from Mobile County Health Department joins us in the 1 o'clock hour for more discussion on that. We'll talk about mud dumping, thin layer, all that stuff coming up today's show.
All right, y'all stay tuned. I got to get out of here. I will do better tomorrow. Sorry, Phyllis, I forgot to say goodbye. This has been the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. This is where